As a boy, though, I had often stayed at Stiles, his mother's place in Sussex. We had a good yarn about old times, and it ended in his inviting me down to Stiles to spend my leave there. "The mater will be delighted to see you again, after all those years," he added. "Your mother keeps well?" I asked.
"Oh, yes. I suppose you know that she is married again."
I'm afraid I showed my surprise rather plainly. Mrs. Cavendish, who had married John's father when he was a widower with two sons, had been a handsome woman of middle age, as I remembered her. She certainly could not be a day less than 70 now. I recalled her as an energetic, autocratic personality, somewhat inclined to charitable and social notoriety, with a fondness for opening bazaars and playing the Lady Bountiful. She was a most generous woman, and possessed a considerable fortune of her own. Their country place, Stiles Court, had been purchased by Mr. Cavendish early in their married life. He had been completely under his wife's ascendancy, so much so that on dying he left the place to her for her lifetime, as well as the larger part of his income, an arrangement that was distinctly unfair to his two sons. Their stepmother, however, had always been most generous to them. Indeed, they were so young at the time of their father's remarriage that they always thought of her as their own mother. Lawrence, the younger, had been a delicate youth. He had qualified as a doctor, but early relinquished the profession of medicine and lived at home while pursuing literary ambitions, though his verses never had any marked success. John practiced for some time as a barrister, but had finally settled down to the more congenial life of a country squire. He had married 2 years ago and had taken his wife to live at Stiles, though I entertained a shrewd suspicion that he would have preferred his mother to increase his allowance, which would have enabled him to have a home of his own. Mrs. Cavendish, however, was a lady who liked to make her own plans and expected other people to fall in with them, and in this case she certainly had the whip hand, namely the purse strings. John noticed my surprise at the news of his mother's remarriage and smiled rather ruefully. "Rotten little bounder, too," he said savagely. "I can tell you, Hastings, it's making life jolly difficult for us. As for Evie, you remember Evie?" "No."
"Oh, I suppose she was after your time. She's the mater's factotum, companion, jack of all trades. A great sport, old Evie. Not precisely young and beautiful, but as game as they make 'em."
"You were going to say..."
"Oh, this fellow. Well, he turned up from nowhere, on the pretext of being a second cousin or something of Evie's, though she didn't seem particularly keen to acknowledge the relationship. The fellow's an absolute outsider. Anyone can see that. He's got a great black beard, wears patent leather boots in all weathers. But the mater cottoned to him at once, took him on as secretary. Well, you know she's always running 100 societies." I nodded. "Well, of course, the war has turned the hundreds into thousands. No doubt the fellow is very useful to her. But you could have knocked us all down with a feather when 3 months ago she suddenly announced that she and Alfred were engaged. The fellow must be at least 20 years younger than she is. It's simply barefaced fortune hunting. But there you are. She's her own mistress, and she's married him. It must be a difficult situation for you all."
"Difficult? It's damnable."
Thus it came about that 3 days later I descended from the train at Stiles St. Mary, an absurd little station with no apparent reason for existence, perched up in the midst of green fields and country lanes. John Cavendish was waiting on the platform and piloted me out to the car.
"Got a drop or two of petrol still, you see," he remarked, "mainly owing to the mater's activities."
The village of Stiles St. Mary was situated about 2 miles from the little station, and Stiles Court lay a mile the other side of it. It was a still, warm day in early July. As one looked out over the flat Essex country lying so green and peaceful under the afternoon sun, it seemed almost impossible to believe that not so very far away a great war was running its appointed course. I felt I had suddenly strayed into another world. As we turned in at the lodge gates, John said,
"I'm afraid you'll find it very quiet down here, Hastings."
"My dear fellow, that's just what I want."
"Oh, it's pleasant enough if you want to lead the idle life. I drill with the volunteers twice a week and lend a hand at the farms. My wife works regularly on the land. She's up at 5 every morning to milk and keeps at it steadily until lunchtime. It's a jolly good life taking it all round. If it weren't for that fellow Alfred Inglethorpe."
He checked the car suddenly and glanced.